It's another edition of the Fallscast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, Sunday, January 2nd, 2022, it is dreary, a tiny bit snowy, you know, it's a winter day. What are you going to do? It's the Fallscast New Year's edition for the year 2022. We made it. Hopefully it'll be better than the last year, and we are, of course, here with... I would say some, but we're actually only here with one of our favorite Fallscasters. So I'll skip the including part and introduce you to my friend and yours, Mr. Bart Sullivan. Bart, say hello.
Hello.
Things are crazy right now, you know? And we don't always know who's going to be able to make it onto the show. But this being our New Year's edition, we'll keep it short, hit some of the top stories. I do not believe we will have an interview this week either. But we will get back to our regularly scheduled or, you know, at least intended programming here as the new year gets underway. So, you know, this is where we would make fun of all the people who aren't here. But under the circumstances, who knows? Even Bart isn't feeling well. I'm not feeling well. Nobody's feeling well. The Omicron variant is tearing its way through the country. And I feel like this is the one where finally everybody knows somebody who has been sick or has been sick themselves. So
yeah, it's not fun out there right now.
No, it's not. But it is the new year, and we will chat briefly once again on today's Fallscast. We will not have an interview, but again, we will get back to our regularly intended programming once the year sort of starts to get underway here. But as always, we do encourage our readers slash listeners to shop local. So please keep your money in the Falls. Right now, of course, I'm sure most people are doing carry out, which is completely understandable. So, Bart, did you sample any of our local wares this week? Or since, I guess, the last time we were together, which was 2 weeks ago, maybe?
You know what? I didn't really go many places this week. I tried to stay, you know, at home, and I didn't even really carry out much. I think the most that I really carried out from was from Chen's on New Year's Eve.
Gotta love Chen's.
And that was really fun because I haven't gotten there in a while, and the delivery guy recognized me for my job. And it's like, hey, I know you.
Wait, Chen's delivers?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. This changes everything. I'm just kidding. It's not that big of a deal. That's cool, though. Yes, well, I do love Chen's. Chen's is the good sort of cheap, quick Chinese food, Asian cuisine, if you will, in Cuyahoga Falls, right there on State Road, close to, is it close to Acme, right down from the Indian restaurant, kind of?
Yeah, it's in the same plaza as the Indian restaurant.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I didn't really do too much either. I mean, I was going to talk about Kiplis, but I'm pretty sure I talked about it last time in case I didn't. Kiplis is an awesome bakery owned by a guy, I think, who's from, like, Bulgaria. It's something like that. I don't know. Bulgaria might be the wrong country. I've asked him to come on the show. Holidays are obviously very busy for bakeries. So he's into it, and he's willing to do it, but he needed probably a break. In fact, I thought they were going to be open today. I was going to pick up more cookies because my kids were going to a holiday celebration. I wanted to send some cookies with them, but I got there and they were actually closed. And it seemed like online they were open on Sundays. So, you know, there you go. But we actually ended up going to Acme and finding some of those Italian style cookies. I love those little Neapolitan cookies, the ones that are like, they look like 3-layer cake
with
like chocolate around them, you know, but they're about the size of a, I don't know, like less than the size of it, like half the size of a credit card or something. I love those. They're so good. So I found some of those in like a cookie tray. But anyway, yesterday I had made plans to meet up with some friends all masked up and outside to walk around the Overlook Trail down there at the end of Sackett Avenue, you know. Technically Akron, but I know a lot of our Fallsites will, you know, we'll recognize that spot. So we were looking for somewhere to eat, and of course it was New Year's Day, so a lot of the places we wanted to go were closed, and we were trying to be careful. We ended up going to Donato's. When we did eat in, there was not a single person there. They had sanitizer all over the place. We kept our masks on except when we weren't eating. And we ordered a large pizza, myself and my two little kids, and we sat there and just ate the pizza. And I believe that franchise is locally owned. And then we went to the Akron Zoo on Thursday for Wild Lights. It was the last day of Wild Lights. That was really cool. You know, they didn't even open until 5, so you couldn't go into the zoo early or anything like that. And it got, you know, it was dark by the time we were walking in. And, you know, the work that must go into putting up all those lights is just really impressive. I was really kind of blown away by that. And also, I think some of the enclosures actually have, like, heated platforms and stuff to kind of get the animals to come and hang out closer to the viewing areas. So, you know, you like face to face with a lioness, you know, the bear's sleeping right in front of the glass. Like, you get to see all the animals pretty up close. So that was really cool. And I did check in on our friend, the blue lobster. She is healthy and presumably happy and still right outside the food court, which is not my favorite place for her.
I don't know if it's terrible placement or perfect placement.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there was like a lot of back and forth about whether to put her there, but she's doing well. And there was a guy standing right there, and I was able to like tell him the whole story, you know, about how she was found right here in Cuyahoga Falls, the red lobster. So make sure you stop by and see Claudia, the blue lobster, if you're at the Akron Zoo. Wildlife ran through December 30th, so we were there the last day. They returned to regular hours, I think, probably as of today or tomorrow. But I'm sure they'll be taking down lights for the next month. But that was a lot of fun. I wanted to mention a local artist I found at the Looking Glass Gallery downtown in Cuyahoga Falls. I believe his name is Eric Bamer, but he has a shop called Poor House 27. This is poor art. If you're interested in that sort of thing, it's the kind of thing where they take, you know, multiple colors of acrylic paint and pour it onto canvases to make it look all kind of like runny and, you know, in my opinion, cool. I have a spot in my house where I wanted some art, some big pieces. So I offered to buy the canvases and commissioned a couple pieces from him, and I'll actually be picking those up today. So I can send a picture of them over to you, Bart. Maybe we can get them on social media.
Definitely.
But I wanted to shout out Poor House 27 because he's a really good guy. He was really open to, you know, the commission. It's not terribly expensive art, you know, for what it is, which is really nice if you're looking for something like that. And he does have some pieces that are in galleries and other places. So he has some stuff in Looking Glass. He actually has a piece in City Hall somewhere he gave to the mayor. And he's on Instagram as poorhouse27. So check him out, and I will send pictures of the pieces that I commissioned as soon as I get them. All right, anybody else? Just kidding. There's nobody else here. You know, as you can tell, there's just the two of us here. You know, sometimes that's the way it works. But for us to make sure that we're continually putting out content for you to check out, it would be helpful if we had, you know, submissions. So if you're interested in writing for us, taking pictures for us, drawing for us, you know, bringing interviewees to us, or you'd like to be an interviewee yourself or anything like that, drop us a line at falsefreepress@gmail.com or hit us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/falsefreepress. If you don't, you know, episodes like this where there's only two of us, might go away altogether because we just won't do it anymore. Just kidding. You can't get rid of us that easily. Right, Bart?
We're doing the show with just the two of us. It's pretty obvious.
Right. The other thing you can do to help us out, besides dropping us a line and all of that, is by reviewing us on your podcast catcher. So if you're listening to us using Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever it is, Google Play, go in there, drop us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. You know, We take criticism, okay? Mike, who is not here, doesn't, but that's okay. Just kidding, he does. I can't believe I waited until now to mess with Mike.
Yeah, Mike spent enough time messing with you that...
Exactly. I mean, all this time I could have been, you know, saying all kinds of terrible things about him, but I, unlike him, do not hate him. So, I guess the last thing we can say, we've already even started to touch on the coronavirus, the COVID-19, Omicron, whatever you want to call it. It is as important as ever, and maybe more important, to get vaccinated and wear a mask. Everything we hear suggests that the folks who are in the hospital and having the worst time with the virus are the folks who are not vaccinated. So not only will getting vaccinated help protect the folks in your community, it'll help you get over the illness more easily if you should get it. And if you don't, then it's possible you could end up having a really rough time with it. Whereas folks who are vaccinated are, even if they still get the virus, they still get over it generally speaking, more easily than those who are unvaccinated. So please, please, please get vaccinated, get boosted. And also, just because there's no, you know, governor's mandate telling you that you have to wear a mask when you go in the store or anything like that, please still do that. The more we protect each other and our community, the more easily we can keep kids in school and still be able to go out to eat and stuff like that, provided we, you know, take safety precautions. So keep those hands clean, wear a mask, get vaccinated, get boosted, and let's get over this thing already. I mean, I was sick of it before, and now it's somehow worse. So
let's not go into 3 years of this.
No, I hope not. We're getting there, though. All right, so for our roundtable discussion, we just have a couple of quick items we want to discuss that were in the newspaper this week. First is there is going to be a $15.5 million project from the Summit County Land Bank and TESTA, which includes plans for 50 new townhomes downtown along South Front Street, plus a brand new parking lot and the demolition of several current structures. And the vacant building that's going to be demolished is 1704 Front Street, which is on the corner of Chestnut Boulevard. Before the call, Bart and I were talking about this, and I was saying, you know, sometimes when it comes to townhomes and things like that, people in the community are pretty, like, up in arms against these kinds of projects. But I think when you drive along South Front Street and see the structures that are going to be demolished and the areas that are going to be built up as a result of this project, it's actually probably going to be pretty nice and help really develop that on that end of Front Street. What do you think, Bart?
I agree. Right now, it's nice that there's a little parking lot over there, but it is completely in ruins. Where after demolishing this gas station that hasn't been a gas station in years, you know, at least spruce it up. There was so much focus on North Front Street and getting that all put back together, and everyone's so happy about it. But then you go down the street where all the breweries are, and it's just like, one side looks perfect, and the other side looks like it's in shambles.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that maybe even, like, the Faber, like, auto body shop is going to be part of all that renovation, too, and, like, the dry club and building. And I feel, and I don't know this for sure, so, you know, look into it. But I think that all that stuff is going to go, and we're going to see townhomes go up there. And I don't think they're going to be the kind where there's, like, retail on the bottom either. Because I have a friend at the land bank who I talked to about that, and I don't think that that's going to be the case. But I know the city's, like, major effort here is to carry the success of Front Street as far south as they can. And I think ultimately they'd like to carry it north, too, you know, have it go past Highway 8 so that you can walk all the way to Hudson Drive and maybe go to like, Divine Food, Spirits, and Wine. And be able to walk back and get a cocktail at Cashmere Cricket before you head to, you know, the pavilion for a show or to ice skate in the wintertime or whatever it is. So I think these projects, you know, at least help to expand the footprint of Front Street's success. And I'm sure there will be plenty of people lining up to get in those units as they're built. The article says that they'd actually build them, I think, like 16 at a time, starting in 2023. So there'd be 16 built next year, 16 built the following year, and then they'd finish up after that, I guess, in 25. And then in the meantime, they'll be spending some time demolishing some of those structures. They're actually going to use those tax increment financing programs, also called a TIF, to kind of reroute the taxes in order to support the infrastructure for the new project. So taxes that would have been paid as taxes will now actually be used to make sure that there's, you know, the right kind of, like, sewer systems and all that stuff that they need for these new buildings, these new residences. So they've got, and the city is actually going to foot the bill on a couple of those things too, just to help make the project a reality. And the land bank being involved, I think, is nice because it makes a public, you know, entity a major player in the project instead of just a private entity like TESTA or whatever sort of developer you want to think of. So things are happening down there even still after all this time of you know, Front Street being booming. Final thoughts on that, Bart?
I love to see what happens when it's all done. I see so many complaints about, you know, this happening. We had complaints on when they discussed it in the city council meeting that, you know, we posted our city council minutes and someone complained about it. And it's just like, you know, let's keep, you know, thinking positively about what could happen here.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I mean, condos can be one of those things that really drives a wedge in the community. Sometimes it has to do with where they're going to be. I mean, if you recall Sycamore, the townhomes that were going to go in there, you know, they had to change the zoning in order to allow that to happen. And people were upset because of the environmental impact, because the golf course that was there was like sort of like more cohesive with nature. But the argument, there were a lot of different arguments. You know, they thought like, well, if we don't rezone it, then if the guy sells it to somebody else, they could just put in another storage unit. At least this way there will be residences. Of course, those residents will support Woodridge and not Cuyahoga Falls. But, you know, Woodridge is part of Cuyahoga Falls community too. So, you know, and also this new effort is not, it's said to not be affecting the school district at all. Right now, the properties pay something like $20,000 in property taxes to the school district, but with residences there, it could be up to close to $200,000 once it's all finished and you have folks living in those properties. So, could do a lot of good. I don't know. Let us know what you think. As always, drop us a line, fallsfreepress@gmail.com, or hit our Facebook page, facebook.com/fallsfreepress. All right, so the next one is, we discussed in the last episode that Judge Kim Hoover in the Stowe Municipal Court had been charged with, you know, using tactics to force people who couldn't pay fines and costs and things, you know, to make them do that. Like, he would put them in jail, apparently, and, like, let them stew for a few hours to try and force them to get the dough to pay their fines or whatever it was, which is apparently not cool and also illegal. So in this week's paper, he officially denied all charges against him in what was a 35-page complaint, complete with, you know, specific evidence of specific cases and individuals who had, you know, been, I don't know if victims the right word, but they had been the ones who were facing these tactics when they appeared before Judge Hoover. So now there's going to be a pretrial conference with the Board of Professional Conduct, and that's scheduled for January 3rd. There's actually an attorney from the Lima area, a retired Lake County judge, and a Fifth District court judge who will be on that Board of Professional Conduct that'll hear that case. So we'll see what happens with that. I don't know, Bart, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I don't know how he's getting out of this one.
It seems like he stepped in it a little bit.
That's what I was trying to say.
I mean, I don't know if he feels that way. I mean, he certainly has denied the charges, and I guess we'll fight the whole thing. If he were to be, you know, found to have have done these things, he could be disbarred as an attorney, and if he's disbarred as an attorney, he can't serve as a judge. And if he can't serve as a judge, then he'll be removed. And this is the judge who wanted to stay on the bench so badly that he tried to take his Republican colleague's seat on the bench in the last election. Hoover's a Republican himself. Now, I will say he has tussled, if you will, with the Republican Party on numerous occasions, including one famous time he actually ran as an independent against the Republicans who were there. But he has been an operative in the Republican Party, at least in Cuyahoga Falls and certainly in Summit County, for quite some time. So, you know, he wanted to keep his seat on the bench in the Stowe Municipal Court beyond the time of his current term. And the reason that he went after his partisan and professional colleague there in the court was because he's aged out. He can't run for another full term. So the only way he could serve any longer than he currently is would have been if he could have beat Lisa Coates, took her seat, stayed, I think, an extra 2 years, and then allowed the governor, whoever it would be, in a municipal court to actually appoint the replacement for his existing seat. He lost that election. Lisa Coates is still on the bench. and now he is facing this pretrial conference with the Board of Professional Conduct, and potentially could be disbarred and removed. So I guess we'll see what happens. I personally do not think he'll be removed. I don't know how, because I think that the complaint actually shows some pretty specific evidence, but I just feel like things like this, it just never comes to pass. But I certainly hope he gets what he deserves. So final thoughts, Bart?
We'll see.
Yeah, we will. Couldn't have said it better myself. All right, so I just wanted to quickly talk about this one. Casey Weinstein is a state house representative who does represent certain parts of Cuyahoga Falls, but more Stowe and Hudson, and I think Monroe Falls also. But I believe there are pieces of Cuyahoga Falls that Mr. Weinstein actually is part of or represents. I don't know how that will be affected with redistricting and things, but he did have like a little bit of a controversy. He had posted a tweet after having a conference call with a whole bunch of, well, with the CEO of Summa Health, and they were apparently talking about the issues that the hospitals are facing. And his initial tweet said, was just briefed by a major hospital network CEO. It's not just that they're beyond capacity. The families of their unvaccinated patients are attacking caregivers for not giving them the, quote, right meds and he says in parentheses, quack treatments. 25 incidents every day. This is insane. And then he had to go back and clarify that the families of patients who are trying to get treatment that have nothing to do with COVID are also attacking hospital staff. And he, I guess, was kind of like beat up in the media over that and said that he had clouded the message, deleted the original tweet, and sort of clarified in a new tweet. I don't know if I'm reading this wrong, Bart, and maybe you haven't looked at it enough, but it sounds to me like he initially said, people are attacking hospital staff because they want to use, you know, whatever weird, you know, COVID treatments that have been debunked as not effective for COVID-19. And people got mad at him because, you know, he had not acknowledged that the hospital staff are getting attacked, not just by COVID, quote unquote, quacks, but also folks who are just trying to get treatment, you know, but are having a hard time because of COVID and have, you know, don't have COVID themselves. So I don't personally see why this was such a major, you know, thing. I mean, those people are still attacking hospital staff largely because of COVID and because of the fact that the hospitals are full of COVID patients because they refuse to get vaccinated, or wear masks or whatever it is, right? Is that the way you hear all that?
I took it sort of as he tried to claim that the hospitals weren't treating everybody equally, and when that's not really the case, and I think when having deleted the original post and then, you know, tried to clarify himself, it just made it worse.
Yeah. Even with the article and, like, the explanation, I don't think it's especially clear. But I think his initial intention was to say people are attacking hospital staff because they want the hospital to give them, you know, treatments that have been debunked as ineffective or whatever for COVID-19.
And I don't doubt that there are people out there who have.
Right. And I think, well, I think that what he's saying is that is happening. And there are a lot of incidences of that per day. He said 25 per day. I think the difference is that, like, there may be some fraction of those 25 incidents per day that where people are getting attacked that aren't necessarily because somebody wants, you know, ivermectin or whatever the hell thing it is, you know. But, you know, they're upset because they need a treatment for something else and they're having a hard time getting it because there's a huge wait at the hospital or there's no space in the hospital. But that space and that wait is largely because, you know, of COVID-19 patients, you know, taking up a lot of space in the hospital. So to me, it's still like the same problem. The only difference is that the number of people who are attacking or the number of attacks that are happening against hospital staff as related to COVID are not necessarily 25. I don't know how many it is. Maybe 20 of those are like non-COVID and 5 are because of COVID.
Yeah.
Maybe 20 are because of COVID and 5 are not. I don't know. But I still don't think that it necessarily warranted all the drama that it apparently produced. But, you know, again, I could be missing something. I could be reading it wrong. So, you know, But Casey Weinstein is a respected member of the House of Representatives in the state of Ohio. He was elected in a district that I think had historically been Republican. It was a surprise victory for him. And I believe he was reelected as well. So, you know, people trust him. They seem to. And if he thinks that, you know, his trust might be eroded by something like this tweet, then I can see why he would want to, you know, clarify the situation. So. All right. Well, Suzanne is not here to deliver her good news, but I would be happy to deliver it on her behalf. On the front page of the Falls News Press, there was an article about a local group called Shock and Claws, which is hilariously punny, who gave a local waitress at Molly Brown's in Cuyahoga Falls an $1,800 tip. Basically, 18 people got together and chipped in $100 each and then, you know, called the restaurant and said that they wanted to be served by somebody who could use some financial help. And so they went in there with their $1,800 poised to give a nice tip to somebody who could use it. And that's what they did. They gave $1,800 to a woman named Shelly Chavez at Molly Brown's. And I'm sure she was very excited about that. It said that, she was really overwhelmed when she was, you know, counting up the cash, that there was a whole lot more money than she needed to pay their bill. And, when she realized how much it was, she was pretty surprised. It's one of those situations where you see stuff like that on TV, but you don't think, you know, it's really going to happen. And then it happened to her. She's from Kenmore in Akron, and, she's worked at Molly Brown's for 11 years. She's got 2 grown kids, 5 grandkids, and a lot of bills. So I'm sure that it was a helpful windfall for her financially. But apparently this has been going on for a long time. There's a book called Nickel and Dimed on Not Getting By in America by a woman named Barbara Ehrenreich. A lot of people may have read this book. I actually have read it, and it's about a woman who basically drops everything and goes out into America to see if she can get by on minimum wage. So she pretends to have no education and to essentially be like a single woman, and she like takes Greyhound buses into various towns, tries to get jobs, you know, Walmart, Denny's, wherever she can, to see if she can make ends meet. And what she discovers is that, of course, you can't get by on minimum wage in the United States, or at least you couldn't at the time she wrote the book, which, to be honest, was quite a while ago. So the group, this Shocking Claws, had read that book and had been inspired by it, and had the idea to go out, you know, each year. And so there are a lot of like other groups that kind of pop up and do it themselves. This is actually something Suzanne had talked about with us, trying to do, in our community here in Cuyahoga Falls. So I think there were maybe multiple groups who were trying to do this, where you know, go out to eat and you bring an extra 20, 50, 100 bucks, whatever, and however many people are there, they collect that dough and they use it as the very big and very generous tip, for the waitress. So. What do you think, Bart? If you were a waiter at Molly Brown's and you got an $1,800 tip, what would you do?
Honestly, if I got a $20 tip, I'd be excited.
Right.
So an $1,800 one would be just, I'd be over the hills.
Yeah, for sure. I actually did used to wait tables, and occasionally, you know, you would get like somebody who would leave you, 10 or 20 bucks. And as long ago as that was, some 20 years ago, you know, getting a tip like that was pretty awesome. So yeah, to get $1,800 would be amazing. I had heard stories of people getting like $100 tips and stuff. And, I think it happens a lot with DoorDashers too, you know,
yeah,
DoorDasher comes to drop off the food and you just give them a really sweet tip, you know?
I had once when I was doing shipped back before COVID, I got, the person who picked up the food at the store gave me like a $15 tip. And then later on in the app, I got another like $25 tip.
Nice. Well, I'll take that. Well, it is always nice to pass on some helpful donations if you can. So maybe some of our listeners will go out and drop a big tip the next time they go out to eat or get DoorDash or whatever it is. Something to think about. So congratulations to Miss Chavez. I hope the dough helped out, and you know, I guess we'll see her at Molly Brown's. Slap her a high five next time you see her. All right. I didn't get my guitar to do the Bart's Arts theme song variation that I did one time, which when the next time we saw Suzanne, she just said no. But it is now time for everybody's favorite segment, Bart's Arts.
Yes. So earlier last year, it's weird saying last year, City received the National Endowment of the Arts Art Town grant to create art along the river. Now the city is seeking input from residents and visitors about how they interact with art downtown and how they see the river. So I'll post the link on our Facebook page, but they have a short survey on how people interact with art and interact with the river, whether they do float the river or kayak or just go and enjoy the scenes.
Cool. My sense is that there's already a lot of art out there that is inspired by the river, you know, our community. Yeah?
Oh, there is. There's so much. And part of what this is they want to see, you know, they're working on that big project for this grant, and they want to see how people, you know, how people see art downtown.
And I guess how they integrate the river into art. I mean, like, I'm trying to imagine, like, how you might, like, make art that actually, like, interacts in some way with the river. Like, you know, like I don't know, wires or something that hang down into the water and, like, create a particular kind of, like, a flow pattern. Or, I don't know, I mean, or is it just, you know, a mural along the rocks? Or is it, you know, who knows? I don't know. I guess that's what the survey is for. So that's really cool. I'm honestly, you know, I think one of the reasons Bart's Arts has been such a popular segment just in general is because just the way in which art has, like, started to really, like, embed itself in our community. You know, I mean, it is art everywhere. We've got lots of great galleries. I mean, some have popped up and then popped back down. But, I mean, you know, there's a couple of great spaces downtown. And then, of course, we have this Public Arts Commission now, and we're looking at probably having some permanent murals and things around downtown as time moves on, too. So it's really just an exciting time for art in Cuyahoga Falls. And, I mean, it's not to say that it wasn't before. I mean, with organizations like Collide Cuyahoga Falls, which, you know, curates these different shows that include not just visual art, but dance and music and, you know, all kinds of things. It's just really a great time, you know, for art in Cuyahoga Falls. What do you attribute that to, Bart?
You know what? It's hard to say because it just sort of all happened. You know, it happened over time, but it sort of happened a lot all at once.
Yeah.
We started seeing, and I think part of that has to do with opening up Front Street.
Of course, yeah. There's been some cool things in other communities, too. I mean, I think, you know, like with the Black Lives Matter movement, you had, like, these giant murals on the street that said Black Lives Matter. But then other, like, little things, too. Like, I love in Stowe those little the traffic boxes that control the lights, the way they've painted those up. I really just want to steal that idea and bring it to the Falls. I think it's so amazing. And there could be a really cool way to do it. Like, one thing I think would be really cool to incorporate into some of the public art stuff is just those little concrete street signs that you sometimes see still on some corners. I think there's one in the alleyway right by Flurry's, and then there's a house somewhere in Ward 4 that, like, has one in their yard, and I'm guessing they have it because they happened to live there when it came down and were able to hold on to it. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? They're, like, yellow, and they're sort of...
I know what you're talking about. I can't place where any are, other than they're over there by Flurry's.
Yeah. I was just thinking it'd be cool if we could, like, incorporate that idea maybe into some of those public arts. Like I was saying, you know, the traffic boxes in Stowe, they're beautifully painted. And in some cases, like, really striking, you know, like, you can't help but see them. And the folks in that arts commission over in Stowe did a great job because that was created pretty quickly, and then all of a sudden those were all painted, so it happened fast. But, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, maybe some of the boxes here in Cuyahoga Falls were painted to include, like, the street names or something, you know? I don't know. Just a thought. But yeah, I love that art has become such a big thing here in town. And be really interested to see what people put in their surveys about incorporating the river into art or art into the river.
And finally, we've got... Upfront Art Space is hosting a watercolor astrology class on January 19th where participants can discover how to paint different constellations. The class costs $30, and the class size is limited for obvious reasons. But
wait, is that do you mean watercolor astronomy?
No, it does say astrology. I don't understand why it says astrology, but it does say astrology.
Okay, I'm confused, but I'm into it. You know, yeah. Let's do it. I don't have $30. No, I do. I probably do, but I'm busy on the 19th. no, I love Upfront Art Space. And I would be very interested to see what kind of work comes out of this class. In fact, I've been actually meaning to go to Upfront Art Space. One of the really cool things about Upfront Art Space, I think, is that, you know, not only do they have a whole bunch of really cool art in their space, you know, whether as galleries or just as sort of like rotating pieces that you can go in and check out that are local or quasi-local, you know, like area, community, county, I don't know. But also they have a really nice frame shop. And I've just gotten into, you know, incorporating some art into my house here. And, man, frame options are just – it's exhausting to look at that stuff and try to figure out, you know, what you want and find it online and do it yourself. So to be able to take it in there and have them do it is a really handy resource here in town. And especially during COVID, I think a ton of people have, you know, been purchasing art. Looking around, you know, they're stuck at home and they're looking around. They're like, that wall could use a painting. And, you know, so watercolor astrology, guys, yeah. January 19th.
And that's all I have for Bart's Arts.
Well, that's all we have for the podcast. We want to thank everybody for joining us this week. And by us, I mean just Bart and I. That's it. Just the two of us. We don't have an interview this week, but hang out and catch us next week. And we will see what we can whip up. If you have an idea for an interviewee, drop us a line at falsefreepress@gmail.com or facebook.com/falsefreepress. And obviously, we're always in the market for article submissions. Bart has really carried the torch with the written content on our website at falsefreepress.com. Particularly during the holiday season, if you hadn't been keeping up, he did write a one film review every day for the 12 days of Christmas. Which has now become our 12 films of Christmas. You did it 2 years, man. Now you have to do it every year.
I don't know. People did reach out to us and gave us their ideas for their favorite Christmas movies. So that was a good 13th day.
Was there a couple of particular movies that were like at the top of the survey?
Muppet Christmas Carol.
Really? I'm not even sure I've ever seen that one.
It's probably, in my opinion, the best adaptation of Christmas Carol.
Okay. I mean, I'm partial to Scrooged, which is also an adaptation of Christmas Carol. I used to say that was my favorite Christmas movie, but I found myself always gravitating toward the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And I do have on DVD the Star Wars Christmas special. It exists. It's in the world.
And there's supposed to be a 4K edition coming out.
4K? Oh, my God. You need 4K of that. They did make a kind of a new version of it. I think it's Lego.
The Lego, yeah. It is the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special that came out last year. And that was the part of the it was part of the sequel trilogy, but it was also part of all of them.
Yeah, and it did adapt some of what happens in the original Star Wars Holiday Special. If you're not familiar with the Star Wars Holiday Special, it was a made-for-TV movie in which the characters from Star Wars have to get Chewie back to his home planet in order to celebrate, I think they call it Life Day.
Life Day.
With his Wookiee family. And there's all kinds of misadventures along the way. And really just like dumb little cameos of like, you know, Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill on like a TV screen in the Wookiee living room.
There is a little, like, maybe 20-minute segment on Disney Plus about, like, the history of Boba Fett. And there's just one interview with George Lucas on there. And he's just like, CBS asked me to do a holiday special. And he just left it there. Like, oh, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, it was a very well-guarded film for a long time that he didn't want anybody to see, but you know, people recorded it on VHS and slapped it on DVD and started putting it on eBay, so there it is. Well, now you know all about the Star Wars Holiday Special here in our wrap-up segment of this week's Falsecast. The point is, Bart does a lot of writing for our website, so if you are interested in doing some writing, you can help Bart not have to do so much writing And, you know, maybe it'll be my New Year's resolution to do a little more of that myself. Anyway, no one else is here to laugh at our jokes and make this, like, you have to have that, like, that laugh overdub, you know, on a show like this so people know when to laugh. Because we're not funny. I'm not funny. Are you funny? I don't know. I'm not funny.
No.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. Remember to get vaccinated. Wear your mask. We would like you to join us next week. We hope you'll join us next week. Like I said, get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Say goodbye, Bart.
Goodbye.
Later.
FalseCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Call to Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.
So when you pour this stuff in a glass, it's like glittery. Yeah. Somebody did that. So anyway, Mike had some, poured it all over himself. That's what the glitter was when he got home, Suzanne. It was from the seltzer drink. Anyway, no one else is here to laugh at our jokes and make this